Any of you who missed the opening of court this morning, I want you to know that Judge Cudahy didn't suddenly get younger and better looking. We're joined now by Judge Ann Williams, who will be the third member of this panel for the remaining five cases that we're going to hear this morning. Next case is United States versus Dexter Betts, 08-3555, and Mr. Leonard is up.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Mike Leonard on behalf of Dexter Betts. We're here challenging the district court's finding that the substance at issue was crack cocaine versus merely a form of cocaine base, and accordingly, the sentence of 140 months that was assessed by the district court based upon a finding that a 10-year mandatory minimum applied because it was crack. I want to make it clear that at all times in the district court, Mr. Betts contested the substance of being crack. We did this in a pre-plea filing when we attempted to get a ruling by the court as to what the substance was. We did this, of course, at the sentencing hearing. And what we've never disputed is that Mr. Betts did, in fact, create a concoction that he calls blow-up and that he sold to the undercover agent in this case, that he sold to other people. And it's undisputed that this concoction that he called blow-up was sold for $5,000 below the street value of crack because, quite simply, it wasn't crack. And it was undisputed that he sold it at that amount. It was undisputed that he received complaints regularly about this substance that he called blow-up that he represented to others was crack. And it's important that it's the government's burden to prove that it was crack, not just cocaine base or a form of cocaine base that was crack. And the two experts, I'm sorry.
And then let me just, but Officer Kimball, because, you know, there's no scientific test for crack. And so, I mean, specifically, and Officer Kimball tested that it smelled, it looked, and it felt like crack. Why isn't that testimony enough?
Well, Your Honor, it's not because he also went on to other things. If he hadn't been cross-examined, then I'd agree with you. And I'd say this case was a lot like the Padilla case, where this court said it's enough for someone to say, gee, it looks like crack. I've seen crack before. However, on cross-examination, he admitted himself, I can't really tell you if it's crack unless I know what's in it. I don't know what's in it. I don't know what the substances were. I don't know how it's prepared. So unlike Padilla and some other cases, there was testimony beyond simply that. And I'll also point out that the agent, the officer in this case, attempted to repeatedly place great emphasis on the fact that it's got to be crack because it's hot. It's heated. Well, we found out in the government's case that that was absolutely false. The government took Mr. Betts to task and went to great lengths to point out the substance wasn't hot. It wasn't freshly cooked. It had been sitting in a garage overnight. So the agent...
Well, isn't that totally dependent on Betts' testimony, that it sat overnight, that it wasn't freshly cooked?
I think the point was, Your Honor, that the government tried to point out through Mr. Betts that he was mistaken. Mr. Betts tried to testify that he created it on September 9th, the day of the offense, and the government on cross said, you're wrong. You actually created it on the 8th, and eventually he agreed, you're right. It wasn't freshly cooked on the day of the sale. It was cooked the day before. The government agreed that those were the state of facts.
Officer Kimball testified it felt warm to him.
Correct. Which I don't know how one conclude that it was. I mean, even if it was warm, I think we can't discount his rest of his testimony. It's not like Padilla where he said, you know, it looks like crack, therefore it is. He agreed with us on cross-examination that you're right. I can't really tell you what it is unless I know what's in it. I don't know what was in it. I don't know what's prepared, which is important because when we're talking about a concoction like blow-up or any of these other street drugs that people are trying to pass off as crack, they put all sorts of things in them to make them look like crack.
Does this blow-up stuff get cooked?
In this case, it got put in a microwave for 20 or 30 seconds.
But they use the phrase cooking it.
Well, they call it blow up. Betts talked about cooking in a microwave for 20 or 30 seconds. But, Your Honor, what is undisputed on this record by both experts, government's expert and our expert, is there's three hallmarks of making crack. It's created by using a large volume of water. It's undisputed that did not happen in this case. The government did not refute Mr. Betts' testimony at the volume of water. In fact, their experts said, we don't quantitate. I can't tell you if there's a drop of water or there's 2 gallons. So that was unrefuted. The second hallmark that both expert chemists agreed to is that the powder cocaine must be dissolved in this large body of water. Mr. Betts' testimony on that issue was absolutely unrefuted. Inexplicably, they didn't put a chemist or other expert back on the stand to dispute that in any way. And then the third hallmark that both experts agreed must be present for the creation of crack is that there's a decantation or filtering process at the end. Again, Mr. Betts testified it was unrefuted that did not happen. And again, inexplicably, the government did not call their own chemist back to the stand or produce some other expert to say that's impossible.
Now, you agree that it's a finding of fact by the district court. Is this or is this not crack? Or is it just something that looks, smells, feels like crack and was being passed off to rip off drug users?
Well, that's the issue.
And that's a finding of fact by the district court, which we review under a deferential, clearly erroneous standard.
It's sort of a mixed question, but I would point out...
Why is it a mixed question?
Well, because we sort of have a standardless question of law as to what crack is. There's really no agreed-upon legal standard. So we put these facts in to try to...
It used to be the case for pornography, too, but
yeah,
I mean,
so.
You know it when you see it.
But, Your Honor, my problem with this as well is that your right factual findings were made, which are entitled to deference. However, the district court's finding on credibility and factual findings were based upon the district court's explicit finding that I've heard expert testimony in other cases. Not in this case. Your testimony is inconsistent with expert testimony I've heard in other cases. Therefore, I'm going to throw out your testimony, give it no credibility. The problem is it's a government's burden to put those experts on. It's not the district court to say, I've heard testimony in other cases that's inconsistent. And the problem would be, think of this as this was a structural engineering case. And the trial court said, you know, I heard your testimony before me today, but I'm going to discount it because in other structural engineering cases, I've heard expert testimony, not of record, that are inconsistent with what you said. That cannot be the case. He cannot go outside this record. It was the government's burden to produce such an expert. We didn't have the opportunity to cross-examine these unidentified experts that the district court...
Aren't there reported appellate cases that have all kinds of information about how crack is made?
Well, nothing that this district court brought to our attention. Yeah, there's certain... there are certain cases to discuss, Your Honor.
Could that be what the trial judge was referring to?
Well, we don't know. He didn't say that. He didn't say cases, Judge. He said expert testimony from other cases. He didn't say I've looked at reported decisions. He said I've heard experts testify in other cases. What you say is inconsistent with those experts. That leaves us in a position, impossible position. We cannot contest those experts' testimony. You won't even know what it is, and it's not of record. But it's not the district court to meet the government's burden. It's the government's burden to put on witnesses to prove that it was crack. And this court has always taken that position very strongly. The government must come forward with the evidence to show that it's crack and not merely cocaine base. But what's also significant is the government's expert said, I can't tell you if it's crack. I can't tell you if it's consistent with crack. Our expert said it's cocaine base, a form of cocaine base. It's not crack. That was not disputed either. If the district court was, again, discounting that testimony because of his knowledge or understanding of other experts that have been in this courtroom, again, it would be entirely unfair to go beyond the record and to meet the government's burden through the district court's thought process about other experts.
Another factor that you rely on is the fact that this was sold for less, right?
Absolutely.
And Beth says he sold the half kilo to Kimball for $7,400, but Kimball testified he paid $11,000. Can you clarify how much Betts and his co-defendants received for the substance at issue?
I think the 11,000 figure is right. The one thing that was not disputed, though, was Betts' testimony that it was below market value by $5,000. I don't think that was ever disputed in this record.
But there can be good, bad, good crack and bad crack. Sometimes a less quality crack, you sell it cheaper, don't you?
Well, maybe. I
hate to say it, but I've seen that in other cases.
I'm sure that's possible. I'm sure that's possible, but I think in this case it just goes to show what they were doing. And plus, in this case, the use of the chemicals, their quantification, that was all unrefuted. I'll sit down.
Thank you. And Mr. Hauser.
Good morning. Uh, May it please the court. The defendant sold crack, and the district court
The case is over.
Yes.
Thank you. We have to know.
And the district court did not clearly err when it found the same. The district court's finding was supported by the forensic analysis of the substance, by an experienced law enforcement officer's conclusion that the substance was crack, and by the defendant's own admissions prior to the sentencing hearing that what he sold was crack. I'd like to address some of the arguments that the defendants raised. First of all, the issue about selling the crack for under market value. The defendant himself testified, and I don't have the site right here in front of me because I don't believe that the appellant argued this in his brief. He argued it below. But the defendant testified that the street value of half a kilogram of cocaine was $11,000 or $12,000 at the sentencing hearing. That's exactly what this half kilogram sold for, was $11,000. $7,400 or $7,200 was recovered from the defendant a short time later, but that was the defendant's cut. That wasn't the ultimate sale price. There was more than one party involved in the sale. So the defendant wasn't selling it for under market value. He was selling it for the exact value of what crack cocaine would be sold for. As far as the cross-exam of Kimball, of course, Kimball can't tell you what's in the substance. He's not a forensic chemist. He can't possibly know, but he can address the test laid out by this court in Stevenson, which is to address whether the substance is crack as those who buy and sell in the market understand the term. And Officer Kimball clearly had the experience to address that test. Mr. Leonard argued that it was undisputed about how much water was used in the preparation. Well, it was disputed, because if the defendant had been telling the truth about how much water he used, then the district court was exactly right. We would have expected to see cocaine hydrochloride mixed with sodium bicarbonate in the sort of flour that the defense's expert said was made. But that wasn't the case. The resulting substance was cocaine base and sodium bicarbonate, the two chemical hallmarks of crack cocaine.
Can you deal with this expert issue? Because in part, the district court relied on expert testimony, and it wasn't part of the record. Shouldn't Mr. Betts have had an opportunity to cross-examine or refute those experts?
I can deal with that, Your Honor. The facts, I think if we go beyond what the district court's comment about having heard about those facts from other cases, and really get down to the conclusion that the district court made, which was, as we've said, if Mr. Betts had been telling the truth about how much water was used, then we would have expected to see in the chemical analysis cocaine hydrochloride mixed with sodium bicarbonate. That conclusion is based on facts that are readily available. If the district court made a comment that he'd heard it from other experts, that doesn't mean that's the only source in terms of some sort of prejudice to the defendant.
Yeah, but it's certainly not clear in terms of his comment. It seems like he's taken into account testimony that's outside the record.
There's no question that that's the comment that the district court made. There's no question that that's the comment that he made. But if, for example, the district court had said, I know from a different case that Teddy Roosevelt was the 26th president of the United States. Well, he may know that from another case, but that fact is easily ascertainable from other sources.
You can take judicial notice of things like that. That's the difference, isn't it?
Well,
I'm not sure. I'm not sure if Teddy Roosevelt's 26 or something. He's pretty close to that. But I mean, facts like that you can take judicial notice of.
Yes, but the fact that you need enough water to dissolve cocaine hydrochloride and mix it with sodium bicarbonate to make crack cocaine, that fact is well known in the case law and in the facts that were presented at this particular sentencing hearing. The DEA test
Yeah, but the problem is the district court didn't refer to the case law. He didn't say it was case law he was relying on.
No, that's correct. But, again, in terms of talking about an actual prejudice to the defendant, the fact that the district court relied on for its conclusion was easily ascertainable from a variety of different sources. The defense had its own expert available to, if the defense had wished, they could have called their own expert back to refute the district court's conclusion. The defendant also didn't object below to the fact that the district court made its conclusions based upon other experts.
Well, there was another comment the district court made about there being no dispute that the substance was cocaine-based. Doesn't that show a misunderstanding of Seventh Circuit precedent that not all cocaine-based is crack?
No, Your Honor. And the
why not?
Because what the district court said, if I can find it here, what the district court said, at one point, I'm just having a little trouble finding it here in my notes, what the district court said was that cocaine base is merely crack cocaine is merely a form of cocaine base. I know it's on page 23 of my brief. Cocaine base is merely a form of crack cocaine that is smokable. So that comment clearly shows that the district court understood that cocaine base and crack cocaine are not synonymous. If there are no further questions, then I would respectfully ask that the district court's finding and sentence be affirmed.
Mr. Leonard, anything further?
I would say that I can't cross Teddy Roosevelt, but that's where the analogy would end in this case. But getting back to the cocaine base versus crack, the district court did say specifically, as you pointed out, Your Honor, that he was sort of angered. He said, why do we go through this process when it's undisputed that the conversion took place? The district court was talking about the conversion from powder cocaine to cocaine base, not to crack. So he said, basically, he threw up his hands, why do we do this if we all agree a conversion took place to cocaine base? That shows he fundamentally did not get it, that the government had to show that it was crack. And getting back to the question you posed earlier, Your Honor, about good crack versus bad crack, it cannot be the standard in the circuit that if I come up to an officer, I give him a bag of hot rock candy mixed with procaine, and if the officer says, hey, it looks like crack to me because it would look like crack, it might even smell like it because of the procaine, and if I threw some sodium bicarb in there too, it might look like it also. But it can't be the standard that then when we actually test it and examine how it was created, and look at how it didn't meet the hallmarks of crack, that we're still going to say it's crack because a street agent says it looked like crack to me. That cannot be the standard. I think this is the perfect case for this court to address that issue. Thank you.
Thank you. And this case will be taken under advisement and